Okay, well, with that then, let's move directly to paper two. Patrick?
Yeah, thank you. So paper two deals with the acknowledging consistency between IS 27 and SIG 13 in dealing with the contribution of a subsidiary to a joint venture or an associate. At the March committee meeting, the committee discussed various alternatives that would address this inconsistency and decided to ask the board whether it wants the committee to consider further this issue. And at the May board meeting, the board expressed support for recognizing a full gain on the loss of control of a business that is sold or contributed to a joint venture or an associate, whether the business is housed in a subsidiary or not. Regarding sales or contributions that do not constitute a business, the board expressed support for recognizing a partial gain in accordance with the 613. As a result, the board agreed with one of the alternatives proposed by the committee in March. We have drafted some proposed amendments to IS 28 revised in 2011 and IFRS 10 based on those board's recommendation. The proposed amendments are shown in Appendix A of the paper. We do not think that there is a need to amend IS 27 or SIG 13 because IS 27 and SIG 13 will be superseded at the time when the proposed amendments would become effective. Lastly, it should be noted that both upstream and downstream transactions would be affected by the proposed amendments. So the questions for the committee are the following. Does the committee agree with the proposed amendments to IFRS 10 and IS 28 presented in Appendix A? And does the committee agree to propose to the board to publish an exposure draft based on Appendix A of this paper?
Comments, Laurence?
On the key question whether I agree with it, I'm going to say that I abstain. I know it's not, we can't abstain in this committee, but that's really my position. It's I abstain. I abstain for the following reasons. Since inception, I had a disagreement with the principle to remeasure previous stakes you had when you are acquiring control in stages or when you keep an interest in an entity that you disposed of. So I have a fundamental disagreement with what the board did several years ago, and I have seen it in practice operating today. And my disagreement is tied up with the fact that it's basically a revaluation of a one-off revaluation under an historical cost model, and I have an issue with that, and I can tell you it's very, very difficult to explain those gains and losses that are generated by companies just when they are in such types of transactions. So I have always supported to go for partial recognition of gain or loss, particularly in the case of disposals. I agree and accept, I should rather formulate it to say I accept that what is being proposed would bring consistency with the literature as it is. Because my former point is more linked to what the ISB is going to do through the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 and IS 27. So with respect to the work of the committee, I can accept what is being proposed and bringing consistency. Albeit I note that this consistency is going to be limited to transaction for operations that are businesses and not groups of assets. So there is still an inconsistency that is not being resolved. So this is why I would abstain, ultimately, even if I have a fundamental disagreement with the key principle behind, but which is more of the board's remit. Now, on the proposed changes, I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I note that for the amendment to IS 28, in paragraph 13, it says the gain or loss resulting from the contribution of a group of assets that is not a business. So we are striking through non-monetary assets to replace it by group of assets, which means that it includes, or the requirements will now apply to monetary assets. And my question, and I have not been able to thought through up until the end, is whether bringing that change to apply the requirement to a larger group of assets, encompassing monetary assets, isn't this going to create other types of inconsistencies, in particular with IS 39? Aren't we going to be faced with interaction of the two standards, this new one, and when you are disposing of a group of monetary assets, which are likely to be in IS 89, and when you have disposals of group of assets under IS 89 and the requirements of IS 89, which are not similar to the ones who will be proposed. So that's my first comment about how have we looked at the consequences of making that change. The second comment I have, which relates to the proposed amendment to IFRS 10, and paragraph 25A, which says, however, the gain or loss resulting from the sale contribution of a subsidiary that is not a business between an investor and its associate or joint venture is recognized. My question is, this requirement applies between an investor and an associate and joint venture. What if you have a group of assets in which you are diluted through an external transaction or transaction with external parties? Is the treatment is going to be different? And is there reasons why the treatment would be different? Say, you may have an IPO. You have a group of assets. I imagine you have a group of assets. You make an IPO. You lose control. You have other investors coming. You now have a significant influence only. How would you account for this? Is it going to be the same or is it going to be different? So that's my second question about the consequences of what we're proposing with those two other aspects.
Shatrick, you want to take those?
I have, by the way,
Scott, Joanna, and Luca in the queue. But let's deal with first. Laurence's question.
Oh, okay. I'll answer to the first question because we thought a little bit about it. When we were drafting the amendments, I think the only driver for the accounting was that when it's a business, we should have a full gain, or the gain or loss resulting from the transaction should be recognized in full. And when it's not a business, the gain or loss resulting from the transaction should be recognized only partially. We do not want to change, in fact, the way the gain or loss is determined. So it can be, if it's an inventory, it would be determined through IS 18. If it's a gain or loss resulting from the sale or the contribution of a financial asset, it would be recognized under the requirements of IS 39, the direct recognition requirements. So this is the first step. I mean, the application of the standard applicable to the transaction. Step two is the consolidation procedure or the elimination of intra-group transactions, which is to say that gain or loss that you recognized following IS 39 or IS 18, then we say when it's a transaction that involves an asset that do not constitute a business between an investor and an investee or between an investor and a joint venture, then we limit the gain or loss that is recognized in accordance with the applicable standard, either IS 39 or any standard. So it's more when when we discussed it, we think it's more a two-step procedure. It's just a the step two is just a consolidation procedure. We don't want to change anything about the recognition of the gain or loss in step one, in accordance with the applicable standard. And we don't think this is contradictory. So in put it simply, if you sell a financial asset from an investor to an investee, then we would apply the same consolidation procedures or the same elimination of gain as for any sale of asset like a PP&E or any
intangible asset. But then at the second step...
Laurence's question, if I understand it, though, is whether striking out the words non-monetary is expanding the scope of this paragraph, which I would agree with, if that's your concern. I don't think we discussed that.
We are extending the scope, I think, but what we should bear in mind is that paragraph 28, when we are talking about the sale of assets, is not restricted to non-monetary assets.
That's right.
It could be the sale of a financial asset. And that's why we thought that the committee said whether it's a sale or a contribution, there shouldn't be any difference for the accounting of a sale or a contribution, because you can easily structure something to be a sale or a contribution. So that's why we came with that conclusion that when it's a sale or a contribution of a financial asset, the accounting should not be different from what you would do for a sale or a contribution of any non-monetary asset. And because this is just a consolidation procedure, and we are just eliminating part of the gain that results from the application of IS 39.
That logic makes sense to me. I actually agree with it. But I didn't remember discussing at the meeting that we were extending what used to apply only to non-financial assets to now include financial assets as well. If everybody's comfortable with that, I certainly am, but I think that's a point that we ought to discuss.
Laurence's other question?
On the second one, I mean, is it related to the equity method? And I don't think we wanted to deal about that transaction. We didn't think about dilution.
We haven't addressed or discussed specifically dilution. Obviously, in the other discussions that we've had on equity accounting, that the committee talked about in previous meetings, then I know that the thoughts that we had there was that whether you have a direct disposal of an interest or an indirect disposal, i.e. a dilution, you should still get the same answer. That ought to be the case. So just thinking, you know, on the spot in response to your question now, my immediate reaction would be, well, why wouldn't we have the same accounting for a dilution disposal as we would for a direct disposal? But this is just my immediate thoughts on that.
Scott, did you have anything else you wanted to kick in with?
Yes. In general, I want to say that I agree with where we're headed. I don't particularly like that we get different treatment for businesses and groups of assets, but I think that is where we are, and I think this direction makes sense. I was also going to make the same comment that Michael did. I think we ought to get the same answer on dilution versus a transaction. But I do know, now that Laurence has brought it up, that the language of paragraph 25A does seem to, you know, make an exception that is described only as an exchange transaction rather than a dilution. So we probably need to tweak that that wording.
Joanna?
I support where we're going with this. I must admit I am a little perturbed at the response of Laurence's question in terms of actually it seems as though we are actually expanding this, which I didn't think that we agreed to, and I'm not absolutely convinced, I'm going through the words again in my head, of what the changes are in 30 in terms of changing non-monetary asset to group of assets, and I'm not convinced that it actually doesn't change it. We were trying to fix one problem, and it wasn't my question, but Laurence, having asked the question, and I know you say you've thought about it, it does worry me a bit as to whether we have gone a little bit further, so I ask you perhaps to look at it. And the second comment was actually around paragraph 25A, and it's how this is written as much as anything else. Given, and it's, can we have a qualifier actually in a standard? So we've got paragraph 25 that says, if a parent loses control of a subsidiary, you do this. We've then got another paragraph that says, but actually, in these circumstances, you don't. And I'm not sure, like, do I follow 25 or do I follow 25A? Because, so I'm being editorial, if you like. I would have been tempted to add to 25C and say, you recognise the gain or loss when the subsidiary is a business, but if it isn't, you do this. As opposed to, so I'm questioning how the standard gets written, whether you can have a paragraph that says do this and then you have an immediately following paragraph that says, well, actually you don't, always.
I think often how we deal with that in terms of the structure is to, in the first sentence, say, notwithstanding the requirements in the subsequent paragraph, do this, and then the subsequent paragraph gives the exception. But you're right,
I'm not very good at that, but it just struck me as it didn't quite work.
I think the idea was to say we don't change 25 and the way you determine the gain or loss. It's always the same way you determine the gain or loss. It's just in step two, as a consolidation procedure, when it's a transaction between an investor and its investee or an investor and its joint venture, then you have to limit the gain or loss. Well,
I personally would argue that that is in disagreement with 25, but I'll leave it to those who are better at writing standards than me.
Patrick, we've had several people now raise the monetary and non-monetary question. If we inserted back into the language the word non-monetary, would that in any way, it might eliminate uncertainty about what the amendment is doing? Would that in any way unhinge what you're pushing for?
Maybe for contributions, but for sales, because you already have in paragraph 28.
Okay.
The.
But that's fine.
But if you sell a financial asset, then you would limit the gain or loss, and if you contribute a financial asset, then you would not limit the gain or loss, which is strange.
They've been strange for...
Yeah, that was strange before, but...
Are we trying to correct it? How do we... I think what Joanna was saying is, are there ramifications correcting that that we haven't thought about yet, because that wasn't what we were talking about?
And just a last comment. When we are talking about contribution of sales of financial asset or, for instance, loans, I wouldn't expect that there would be a significant gain on the loss of control of or on the sale of loans, because fair value of loans usually are very close to their carrying amount. So... when you've booked all the impairments that are required...
Let's not get into that discussion.
But here we are talking about gains, basically, because losses would be recognized anyway.
Luca?
Yes, I started from the same point of Laurence. I'm not very happy regarding the idea to recognize this revaluation, but it is a fact. So I think that the paper is a good compromise regarding the two different elements, and I think that the path that we are running is a good solution for this kind of topic. But I have in mind two elements. The first one is that also looking at the present discussion, we are working and thinking about the consolidated financial statement. But the question is if this kind of approach has also to be applied in the separate financial statements, and which approach have to be performed in the separate financial statement. This is probably a more general issue, and it's covered in general the new rules regarding what you have to do when there is a change in the control of the subsidiaries or whatever. And there are no really specific rules regarding this, and there will be, and I think that some clarification should be indicated, or to underline that this approach has to be applied only for the consolidated financial statement, or vice versa, that there are no difference also in the single enterprise financial statement. I think this could be an issue to think about, because I agree with Patrick when you were speaking about the two-step approach, the facts of the consolidation, but when you think about something in the separate financial statement, the picture could be a little bit different. And in this case, I think that an additional thought could be useful. My personal view is that what you do in consolidated financial statement should be also correct in your separate financial statement. So I do not see any big element to say that there'd be different accounting treatments. But we have to think about this. This is the first issue. The second issue is that my personal view is I think that some additional wording or some indication in the basis for conclusion or some example could be helpful. I appreciated what you have said regarding the two approach, regarding the two-step approach regarding the recognition of the gain and loss and the other elements of the consolidation, and some example regarding cases in which, as indicated in paragraph 25A, a subsidiary is not a business could be helpful. In general, when you think about a subsidiary, you think about something that is a business, which is the opposite case, is something that could be useful to clarify. Probably only one example or a couple of examples could be useful in order to avoid additional confusion regarding the cases that can be performed. The third comment is that I noticed in another agenda paper, I think that is agenda paper 9.4, that this issue that we are discussing is very similar, very linked to another similar issue that we have discussed in 2010, and that we have referred to the board regarding also the interaction between IAS 27 and TIC 13. This is more, this agenda paper to refer more to the non-monetary assets and the elements linked to this. The other was more linked with the contribution to a joint venture. Asking if this agenda paper will solve also the other issue, or if the other issue will remain pending for some reason.
Well, I think in our mind we wanted to resolve all the issues that the committee discussed in 2010.
Okay.
Contribution of a subsidiary, I think, was the main issue discussed in 2010. So we think that these
I agree, but I didn't find any mention regarding the other issue in this agenda paper, so I have the doubt that there were some elements that justify a different approach.
Andrew?
Well, overall, I'm fine with the direction of the paper. Just thinking about this paragraph 30 issue, because I did have a similar point to Laurence. But I must admit, I hadn't thought of it as expanding what we were trying to do. Not in those terms, because, I mean, if you sell a bunch of financial assets to a subsidiary at a profit, you don't recognise the gain in the consolidated financials. I guess if you sell a bunch of financials at a profit to an associate, you could say it makes sense to not book all that gain. I thought the problem with paragraph 30 is, and it needs a bit of thinking about, but I thought the problem with paragraph 30 is all this stuff about commercial substance, what you do, there's no commercial substance, is it crosses the very prescriptive derecognition criteria in IS 39 for derecognition of financial assets. So it's sort of imposing a kind of new derecognition test for financial assets. I thought that was the problem rather than deferring some of the gain that you make by selling them. Yeah, well, it may be, I guess so, but that's...
Charlotte and then Laurence.
I was just really going to ask a question on whether we, paragraph 30 and A14, should then start referring to groups of assets and apply the test at that stage, whereas previously we were looking at the asset level and whether the asset is monetary or non-monetary. So A14 would imply that a group of assets that doesn't constitute a business is then subject to the normal IS 28, which implies that it's both non-monetary and monetary assets that could be included in that group, which is similar to 30. So you almost, I think the discussion was really on non-monetary assets, and now it seems to be on groups of assets, which could be anything. And I wasn't sure the implication of that it now mattered where my monetary asset was it in a business or not, which I didn't think was supposed to be the case.
Okay. Laurence?
It was when listening to Luca that one thing struck me again, and for record sakes, at the moment with the amendments, we are not addressing the cases of contribution of a subsidiary or group of assets to a joint operation and vice versa, transaction from joint operation to a subsidiary. It is getting live, starting to get that type of questions, and there will be questions about whether you take the full gain or you take a partial gain or whatever. So I know the committee refused previously to handle that type of question, but I just want, for record's sake, to mention that I'm starting to receive such types of questions and we'll have to deal with it at some stage, possibly.
Luca?
Just to link to Laurent's comments, I think that the issue is on the table, especially if, I'm coming back to my previous comment, if you look at the single enterprise financial statement in which the distinction between, or better, the effect of the application of IFRS 11 in general is creating some problems in the separate financial statement, and this element could create an additional element if we do not clarify if it is applied also to a separate financial statement. As I said before, you know, I think that what you do in the consolidated financial statement could be in general a good element also for the separate financial statement, but it's clear that a separate financial statement has different structure, different element. We had also discussion with some board member and with some technical staff regarding the application of IFRS 11 in a single enterprise financial statement due also some very big tax difficulties in applying the new rules and in the figures that came out from this council. I think that we should look at this issue in a more comprehensive way.
Are you suggesting that we should... I'm not sure whether you're saying we should do another issue or whether we should incorporate in this issue.
I think that we have to clarify if this kind of approach has to be applied also in a separate financial statement. Okay. That's my point.
Guido, and then Philippe.
I think that Andrew hit the point when he spoke. I read 30 again. I think 30 is really about, does it have commercial substance or doesn't it? And for whatever reason, the board at that time said, well, that seems only be necessary to do this distinction for non-monetary assets, which, by the way, are not financial assets. Non-monetary assets could also be pension liabilities or whatever. That's in IAS 21. There is a definition of monetary assets. So I think we should leave 30 as it is, because it deals really with, does it have commercial substance or not? And then we could include the contribution of a group of assets into 28. I think that makes more sense, because 28 right now only talks about transactions, and then we sell transactions or sales. We should also say that is also true for contributions, and we can maybe include something in 28.
A leap, and then I'm going to ask for suggestions.
To Lucas' point, we and probably many board members are aware that some constituents, especially the ones which apply IFRS in separate accounts, like Italy, do have a lot of questions about the application of IS 27, but more generally IS 39 or IFRS 9 in the separate accounts. To deal only with this issue, as is discussed today, in IAS 27, I think would not be very productive. There are so many other issues that need to be addressed. I think only a comprehensive project to review accounting for financial instruments, including associates, joint ventures, subsidiaries in separate accounts, could be helpful, because if we begin to take it little bit by little bit, it will be a mess. And we will never have a logical and comprehensive accounting in separate accounts. So I have sympathy for what you are asking for, but I think the best way is to have an overall look at the problem.
Okay, I need a plan. Most of the comments I've heard I would describe as yes, but, except for Laurence, which is I'm abstaining, but. And I'm not certain what the plan going forward is. I haven't heard anybody say that Patrick's got the wrong answer. It's just one or more things and concerns and questions around it. So it's not obvious to me how we take this through. And Scott, as usual, you're going to tell me.
I think that most of the comments...
It's quite lonely. Can I make comments?
Fei Long. Oh, Fei Long, yes, please.
Yeah, I'm on the line. I agree with the staff approach to look at whether the disposal is a business or an asset, and propose amendment to eliminate the existing conflict between IAS 27 and SIC 13. Because the board's decisions on IFRS 3 guidance are more recent, and its basis and rationales reflect the latest thinking. Therefore, if this post a business apply IFRS 10 and IAS 27, recognize who can and losses. If not, just assets, then apply IAS 28. And recognize only partial gain or loss. I think this would be a cleaner way to address the existing conflict and eliminate future potential structuring opportunities. And one more comment, because in the committee's work in process paper, there is an issue requesting classification of what is a business under IFRS 3. I just wonder, could we thinking to or consider to clarify the work in progress issue on what is a business first before proposing to draft an amendment to IAS 27 and SIC 13. Otherwise, may still have some practice diversity left for this issue, because what is the business is not it's not as clear. Of course, it is not a big of deal. Just it's more has a more gap remain. That's my comment.
I suspect that getting into the definition of what a business is a long process. We struggled with that when we were doing IFRS 3, and we knew it was less than optimum. But
it's not a big deal, I think. Just thinking about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scott?
Well, I was going to say, I thought, you know, most of the buts in your yes but description were more about drafting and the precision of the amendment. I thought most everybody was agreeing that this was the right conceptual direction. I don't know if we need to nail down the wording in this group or not, because it's going to the board. It's going to be proposed as a board amendment. So I was actually thinking the way forward was probably, you know, okay, we have some things to think about how we draft these changes. But otherwise, I thought the way forward was to proceed.
Joanna?
I was essentially going to say the same thing, answering your question and going back to the question that we were, like, asked to address. This has gone backwards and forwards between the board before. To be fair, you know, Laurence has raised these issues before we decided to go with, and the board did, alternative two, because alternative one included a lot of cross-cutting issues, which are some of the issues that Luca has raised. Therefore, to me, the yes but in terms of the alternative two is exactly as Scott has articulated, which to me is, yep, there are some drafting things that needs to be just thought about by Patrick and the team before going to the board, but proceed as is where I feel is my recommendation as to where we've got to, Mr. Chairman.
I would be tickled to death to take that forward, to use an Americanism. Any objections to the position Scott and Joanna laid out for us? I think we ought to memorialize these concerns that some of the committee members have raised when this goes to the board as a draft, and discuss how they might be addressed. John?
I agree with the direction. Just one comment about the non-monetary issues. I'm unclear about what the group wants to do with it. Should we revert back to non-monetary? And that is that what I hear from? I think that's the only.
Leave it with Patrick to think about.
Yeah, it's not, well, the terrible double negative. It's not something that we haven't thought about. We have thought about it, and I do think that's obviously one of the points that we have to alert the board to and ask them to think about.
I liked Guido's recommendation. In fact, maybe I'll try to follow Guido's recommendation.
Okay. All right, that's what we'll do then.